Well, welcome everybody. We got another episode of Sour and Sass, and I am very excited to be joined by the one and only Dave Cardiel. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Great to be here, Garrett.
I realized I didn't ask. How did I get close? Cardiel, was I right?
Just like you're making a Cardiel, man.
Yes.
If you want to have some fun with it though, roll the R, man. That's actually the correct pronunciation. So if you cut the L.
So my wife's Costa Rican and like fluent in Spanish, and she'll start doing that, and I try to keep up. I'm like, Cardiel, I have to get myself in the mode. You know what I mean? Like, I have to be in that, like, I have to switch my brain. I can't just do it. I can't just turn it on and off.
My wife's the same way, man. She'll come home with it, and I'll be honest, I don't, like, I probably should, but she breaks out the rolling the R's and everything, and it's she's awesome. She's awesome.
I love it. Well, we were talking offline a little bit about content, and you might do a little bit of that, Parsley. Do you get to do any content?
No, just a little bit. You know, we put a few words on the page here and there. So
I love it. Well, you guys got a great platform. It looks like it's obviously targeting like high volume content producers, a lot of media companies, a lot of things where segmentation across audiences matters. But it's a pointed question, but I'd love to get your take on it. And this is usually like how I like to start is blogging still an effective way to drive revenue for SaaS? Blogging, not content marketing, but blogging. Like, is that still an effective way to drive revenue for SaaS in your mind?
Short answer, yes. The long-winded answer behind that, though, is are you doing it right? Still with purpose. You got to have purpose, and it's got to be babysat at all times. Somebody's got to own it, right? The haphazard way of doing it, maybe before, or maybe as a side project or as a group project, can have some effect, but you know, if you're actually making it an integral part of your, you know, overall, you know, demand gen or revenue marketing strategy for an organization, you got to be on top of it. And that's where the analytics come into play. And when I mean babysitting it, it's, are your tags set up appropriately? Or, are you using key buzzwords? Are you learning from your analytics, right? Are you learning from what the audience is telling you? I just gave a talk with Adweek last week about just that topic. Are you actually listening to what your customers are saying and following that? So a little self-serving, but it is what Parsley does. But that's a strategy that we employ because we use our blog as an integral piece of to our lead generation. So,
no, I love that answer, David. I think the reason I ask it is, you know, we have enough exposure at Directive to see a couple things. Like, one of the things I'm noticing, like, straight up, I'm advertising a lot right now. And we offer both SEO and paid media. And a lot more people are wanting paid media than SEO. And in my own business, I used to put a ton of money into SEO. And I'm starting to put a ton of money into paid media because I was struggling. My struggle with SEO, as an SEO, by the way, like, my professional skill as a marketer is probably SEO, if I had to like choose one as like a hard skill. That's what I came up on. I'm finding it more and more difficult to connect my whole strategy as it grows. In other words, like, the more content I create on my blog, the further away I move from purchase intent. I go upstream. I get to top of funnel. I start answering informational intent. I start launching a glossary. I start driving more traffic. But when I go into my HubSpot, when I go into my clients Marketo, when I go into my marketing ops environment, I'm very much struggling to connect my top of funnel traffic with product-led growth. And it gets even harder in a non-trial, high AOV, multiple seats required, multiple buying centers required SaaS org. Mm-hmm. So for the audience out there, if you're in a high AOV SaaS audience and you want to do content marketing, you want to lower your LTV, like, you want to lower your CAC, you want to improve your LTV CAC, you want to create balance in your media plan, like, how do we do that with content? Because, you know, I have some ideas, but I think it's a struggle. I think it's a genuine struggle right now in the SaaS community is, how do we scale content marketing while driving revenue if we don't have, like, you know, a trial like Drift?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think trial's a whole different episode. I'm happy to come on. I'm going to talk about trials and what, you know, and what they mean and really what their impact can and can't be at times. Man, that's a loaded one because, you know, we're just at this. there's two schools of thoughts, which is the way it was and the way it is now, right? The last year, you know, we're in an all digital climate, right? It's and everybody is writing digitally. Everybody's trying to surface their content to the top of the boards, trying different ways of communicating that content, channels, you know, and what you're competing with others. You are, you're also, people just consume, people just as human nature consume content in so many different ways. And it's like, you know, are you moving to where they are? So you started out before just the investment, SEO, paid. You want my opinion, you're doing the right thing. You're investing in the right places, but it kind of goes back to my original point is, you know, are you using, you know, the tools at your disposal to actually, you know, weigh that impact, right? Are you doubling down on what's working? Are you eliminating what's not, you know? So, cause with the paid stuff, I've been there, man. We've thrown a lot of money at paid at different organizations. One in particular I worked at recently where, I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars a month. Just, we were burning $100 bills, man. We were just burning them. Yeah. Like taking them out the parking lot and burning them. Cause we weren't equipping ourselves with the opportunity to just, you know, analyze what's working there and just kind of shifting, you know, on the fly, you know, to see what works. So, yeah, I would just say there to, you know, to kind of summarize is just, you know, you got to continue to diversify, listen to what people are saying, double down on what works, man. I'm oversimplifying it right there, but
you have an important part. Like you got to listen. And so based on, you have that data, right? You have more data, I'd say, than a lot of marketers in the world when it comes to actually analyzing what's working or not. So across your clients in your database at Parsley with your first party data from your clients, what are you seeing as driving the most ROI from content marketing? Like what are the smartest marketers doing with their content strategy that's really working right now?
Yeah. Well, you still have to, you know, I'm still a believer in, you know, from a campaign standpoint in establishing a theme of what works, right? Using the data to establish a theme for a content, you know, because a campaign by nature is, should be time bound. You know, one tactic or one channel you shoot out does not a campaign make, right? I guess you could have an email campaign or something like that, but just thematically a campaign, you know, you last a month, 6 weeks, 3 months, what have you. You know, what I'm saying what works is kind of hinging that theme on a, what I like to call like a primer or a, you know, a long form idea, right? And this can take the shape of a long form, you know, dribble or piece of content around a theme, packed with data, insight, ideas, anything that rolls up to that theme. And then you take a diversified approach to that. So that's our general philosophy. That's how we're doing it here at Parsley. But to answer your question, getting down to a tactic that actually works, a lot like what you and I are doing right now is humanizing, what I like to call humanizing the content in the form of a video content. For us, it's webinars. Everyone's doing webinars, and that's could be a whole show in itself. But to be honest, that's where we're seeing the conversion. That's the tactic in our revenue marketing process that's converting at the highest, outside of people clicking demo buttons and raising their hands and things like that. Just tactically, content wise, that's working for us. And that's feedback we get not only from our data, from what our stack is saying, but we use a BDR model in that and just following what's converting to opportunity. That's the tactic that works.
So, I love it. Now I'm going to follow up on that, but first we have some sour candy. Are you ready?
Let's do it, man. Let's do it.
Oh, all right. Warhead, be my friend today. All right.
Yeah, I went with the trolley here, the sour bright crawler. So
I like where your head's at. I want those. I'm going to talk to my guys because it's not fair that the guests get the good candy and they're just killing me over here.
Yeah. Yeah, that one has definitely an after. That has an after effect here.
Oh, yeah. So I know why webinars can work as a tactic, but I think I'd love to hear from you psychologically. Like this show, for example, I try to interview guests that could be my customer that can help me promote the show so I get an audience. And I like to add a spin to all my content, like sour, so that it's shockingly memorable. And that's kind of it. Why does a webinar work in your mind?
It's a that's a great another great question. I'll go to what I said before. I think it humanizes your content, right? Yeah. It gives an opportunity to talk about your content, right? People can log on and engage. They can listen to it later through the recording, but they get to hear not only from from us at Parsley, but getting down into the weeds a little bit. We try to have, a guest on, just like you're doing right now. We try to have a guest on that is an expert in that theme that I was talking about earlier, talk about it and, open it up to Q&A. We use our social platforms. We do engagement. We do highlights on the speakers that are talking. So we use our channels to really sort of promote it across the board, not just like, here's a topic, come register. We try to go at it through different angles across social, across our email database, across paid, a couple of other directions to drive engagement there. And then, we're getting into the weeds in terms of like the follow-up there, but we do try to engage people on webinars. We do fun poll questions, little shtick, like, the sour candy thing, right? So we try to engage the audience, keep them, entertained throughout, keep them engaged. So they're not just there with the webinar turned on, not really listening. Yeah. And then offer up Q&As, chats, contents, giveaways, things like that within the webinar, keeping them going. We do that so that the BDRs have something to talk about after the fact, because you can turn that over there. We give that level of insight and data over to them so they can do that proper follow-up. And so that the person that they engage with, yeah, I answer that poll question as such. Yeah, I received that handout during the webinar. Yeah, I really liked when so-and-so touched on this. So we start opening up the engagement, and it goes back to what I say, the human, humanizing the thing a little bit, not just did you download an ebook or a playbook or something like that. So,
yeah, see, I had a hard time humanizing them when I've been on them historically on webinars because there's no cameras. Nobody had their faces. Are you showing faces to create that human element? Because that was one of the gaps I saw with a lot of people's webinar strategies. It seemed inhumane. It seemed like the video version of a white paper. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
And how are you tackling that part?
Well, I mean, that's, we turn cameras on. That's one of the first questions we talk about with our speakers is that we turn the cameras on. We make sure our platform's capable of handling that because, you want to see who you're talking to. And you're right. I've done webinars in the past where it's very robotic, very scripted. You don't see the people. And it's like, you're almost reading from a script throughout, or you could be reading from a script. No one would really know. And you're so focused in on it being so perfect, to the point that it's not human. See now, and I don't want to say it was a gift last year, but one of the things bringing us home is you throw in other things in there, right? Dog barking, Amazon delivery guy, ringing the doorbell, right? Somebody's vacuuming upstairs, kids running in and out of the office while people are trying to work, right? We had a webinar last year where, my dog just started barking uncontrollably. And we tend to live tweet during the events like that. And, ended up posting my dog's picture. And that had a little trend going on during the event. Everybody was talking about their dogs for a little while. Made it fun,
Yep.
So
no, 100%. It is cool to see how like B2B has become more B2C through COVID because we're starting to see the humanity of our target account.
Yeah.
Now, you said something earlier that I thought was really interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's like this generational gap in marketing. I don't want to assume I'm younger than you, but I'm just going to go there for a second. When I was learning, and I'm self-taught, no one talked about campaigns. I mean, dead serious here. Nobody talked about themes. Nobody talked about campaigns. All these young bucks coming up, they're all analysis, attribution, optimization. And the irony is I feel like I'm the old marketer now. So in my own agency and in my own conversations, I'm talking about like maybe a creative storytelling, like brand archetypes, all the like traditional marketing stuff, which existed for a reason, like storytelling, creating emotion. Mm-hmm. Like how do we make someone want our agency? How do we make someone want Parsley, not just increase the demo signups? Because that's different. Like,
right.
Why is that? Like, why is that in your mind that like this young generation of marketers, just all we think about is channels and optimization. And then the older group of marketers is thinking more about campaigns and themes, and both have their value, but what's the gap? Like, how do we connect that? Because it's a huge problem in performance marketing is that there's no campaigns, no themes. Like people run Google ads with nothing other than optimization, no brand, zero brand resonance. Brand doesn't matter. It's just, you know, is my CPA lower? Yeah. How do we fix that?
That's an interesting question because I want to believe that's a simple answer. and I really do. And maybe I've just had the good, and I have had the good fortune. I'll just be blunt. Probably over the last, I've had the same team for the last almost five years now.
Wow.
And it is a multi-generational marketing talented team, right?
Yeah.
You know, from, you know, development reps that are straight out of school that are hip to the latest trends and things and lingo, you know, they teach me a thing or two on, you know, on, I don't know, slang, what to use and what not to use, all the way to myself. Right. We'll get into age here, but, so I've been fortunate to have that, but what we've been able to do is strike that balance, right? Is so when I do talk about themes, when I do think about those, you know, the structure of a campaign, and this doesn't happen overnight. I look at it as, I mean, I've been building this over 20 years, right? Building up this acumen. So, you know, taking that data-driven approach, it sounds cliche. I fancy myself being very data-driven, but, you know, I've been able to add that element of talent to my team over the last several years. To the point where it's sort of just expected across the board. So we benefit from that. Now to your listeners that don't have that, you know, my recommendation is to look for it, right? Because there is talent in younger generations, young and up and coming marketers, because they're inundated with data. They're inundated with content. I look at my two teenage boys, you know, they're talking about, you know, they have a general grasp of analysis, the general grasp of statistics, just based off the content and the tools and games and things thrown at them all the time. They know how to look, you know, on the back
end. They have a KD ratio since they were 12 years old that somehow made sense for their, like, for if they're playing Call of Duty. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I was going to say 2 years old, but, you know, it's just like, because honestly, that's when they started looking at, you know, my kids, I added the first iPhone and they're reaching up and they wanted to grab it at 18 months because they just sort of like, I want that.
But how do you teach them the value of the campaign though, David? Because I agree. The marketers of today are exceptionally talented on a technical level. Like today's marketer is very technical. I have like over 70 of them, by the way, that I work with full time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if I were to look at all 70 of them, there's a small percent that I don't know if any of them ever ran a campaign before, if I'm going to be completely honest with you. Like, that's but it's so important. Like, it's so critical because I think it creates this relationship between your strategy and the customer. And it, like, honors the customer in a way that this, like, channel-centric, data-first approach of optimization doesn't. Because there's no – the brand voice doesn't matter. The better headline is the one that got you more demos, regardless of – like, you know what I'm saying? And it doesn't usually go all the way to revenue. It's just like this initial thing. Like,
what you just said there, the headline that grabbed, you know, maybe let's just call it a pop in inbounds or leads, you know, within a campaign, right? What was that pop? What was that centered around, right? Too often folks will see that, like, let's just say it's a playbook of some kind organization just wrote. It's a how to do something, right? To your addressable audience. And you saw that surge. Cool. We drove a lot of inbounds. A lot of people hit demo requests. Awesome. 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 Yay. And then there's just sort of the now what? Well, did you take that piece of content? Did you look at the data? What drove them to the site? What channels did they use to get there? Are they coming through on LinkedIn? Are they coming through on Twitter? Right? Is there a video out there? Did they come through on a paid campaign? Right? Now we're getting into attribution, right? And you're looking at the attribution of what drove that for that piece of content. And man, this is something I tell my team. This is something I've ingrained in them. Is like, until everyone in our addressable market has downloaded that piece of content or embraced that theme, we have not done our job, right? And I say that sort of like from a macro view of just, okay, now let's take that playbook and let's do a webinar. Yeah. Let's get on a video and talk about it, right? or let's tap into one of our third party, an association or something like that, and let's maybe hit up their database. Let's do an event and get a speaker on there to talk about it, right? So now we're diversifying that content to a point where you're stretching that out over time. I talked about being sort of time bound, right? And that you do that intake, you grow the opportunities for attribution, and that is how you start to measure the value of the campaign, right? It's tracking all of those components, and is that message resonating and is it worked? And you do that based off of, okay, we saw a little spike here on something. Well, let's double down and continue to do that. And if it doesn't, kill it, move on to the next thing.
I like that. Now, content marketing for SEO is a lot of why I think content's not working like it used to. In other words, like writing content for a search engine instead of your audience. How do we get away from that? Like, honestly, like it used to be, it was weird, right? So 7 years ago, I started doing SEO for people and I couldn't make them think about SEO. All they cared about was their audience. They didn't care if it ranked. It was all about brand, voice, tone, audience. Fast forward seven years. I can't get anyone to think about their brand. There's no new tools that come out. I can tell you all the content harmonies, the market muses, the Parsleys, all these things. But what about tone, voice, brand, story? Is there a middle ground? Like, how do we find this middle ground of SEO and audience and blend them together in your mind?
And, you know, the way I think about it is, you know, a lot, oftentimes I think we still have a bit of a divide in marketing. Let's go back. You know, I'm going to give you, I'm starting to date myself. We'll go back a little over 20 years ago. I mean, it's marketing was a bit of a catch-all. It still is to this day, right? I think we've made strides, but it still is a bit of a catch-all. When I started out, when I came out, my title was marketing communications specialist. That was my title. Now, what does that say to you? I don't know. I did something in
comms. Press releases. Yeah, you do like press releases every once in a while.
I did lead gen. And I'm going to date myself now because the lead gen I did back then was putting ads in trade pubs, and you receive the punch cards from the magazines, go walk to the sales floor and round robin them around the sales floor. Who wants a lead, right? I'm dating myself now. Technology has taken off since then, right? But
half marketer, half librarian. It's like,
there you go. That's what it was. Yeah. We used to house a content library because we would mail our content out to people, right?
Yes.
We weren't downloading it back then. Anyhow, that's a lot's changed a bit. So, you know, back to some of the things I talked about, to, you know, rising above the noise, you know, we're all writing content to be heard. We want our audience to be looking at our content. We want them to engage. But the, you know, brand and revenue marketing, I think, is that an interesting crossroads? Because I think organizations can swing that pendulum too far one way or the other.
Yeah,
I've seen 100%. I've seen it. And I'm probably leaving a little bit of the enterprise space out of it, because when you have the resources to hire both, rock and roll, you can go do both. You know, but I can look no further than here at Parsley, right? We got to drive revenue. We've got to drive pipeline. Marketing has to be a revenue machine.
Yep.
In order for us to have a job.
Yeah, to get budget, so, to keep budget.
That's what we do.
I
am of the opinion, and this is my opinion, is I think if you're addressing those issues, if you're looking at the data, if you're piping in the right keywords when you're thinking about SEO, if you're applying the right types of tags, again, through the data, and you're doing these things, and you're constantly evolving it, and constantly watching it, and so forth, I think the brand takes care of itself if you're doing that. If you are listening to that, to what the customer is saying, if you are following your data and applying that to your campaign so they get better over time, you'll have that reliance. And there's so many different ways to do that, right? And you do that through your tone and the way you talk. You can do that through, you know, some brands are a little more quirky over, you know, LinkedIn or Twitter or something. Some people have a shtick. Some people have a sour and sass show, right? But you kind of play into that and you kind of build up that brand along with the value. So long as you're providing value along the way, that's what people ultimately want. If you're solving that pain point through it, that brand can take care of itself. And it's possible to do both. So I think that's where your middle ground is.
No, I love that. Now, as you said, it is a sour show. Are you ready?
All right. See, I got some now and laters now. The sour shell shot.
So, I got my warhead.
Yeah.
Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
Well, that one's, the second one's always worth.
I thought I had a cherry. This one's a sour watermelon. Oh, that's just.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. I'm gonna need a second on that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll talk to you with listening for a millisecond here then. Oh, my God. I'm dying. Okay. So, oh, God. The, Oh, that's so sour. It ruins coffee the rest of the day. Just remember that. Now, I do see the way it works. Like, Basecamp, you know, like when I write something from the heart, that thought leadership, I feel like it works, you know? It works. Thought leadership, content, it works. And then I get busy. Then I go, cool, it worked. I proved it out. I'm going to scale this.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't work. So how do we scale thought leadership? Because I'm of the belief that ranking is a very small part of the puzzle. In other words, it's very easy to rank.
Mm-hmm.
What's very hard to do is get someone to click on your post, read it, and be more likely to hire you afterwards than before. That's how I evaluate content. If someone reads the content, are they more likely to hire us or the client than they were before? And the irony is I think a lot of times we write content that almost makes people less likely to hire us because it's a freelance writer that we paid $300 for 750 words that our editor is completely swamped. He's wearing 3,000 hats. And we try to scale content. We end up doing, you know, 50 pieces a month and only two of them do anything. How do we avoid that? Like, how do we scale
content? I'm using your numbers throwing them right back at you, man. Yep. Why not just focus in on those two the next month?
I like that.
Because that's ultimately what we try to look at here. I'll tell you a little story, and this was a bit of my aha moment with Parsley. It's a nifty little tool, and I'm not just drinking the Kool-Aid. No BS there. Gives you a lot of pretty cool insights. I actually have it up and running all day on my machine because I'm looking at what people are doing on our site. I started in August. Greenfield marketing, build a marketing team, you know, starting from scratch. And one of my first priorities, one of my first goals was just, I'm just going to bring in some inbounds. I'm going to toss them over to our new BDR team.
Yep.
Let's figure this out. Let's just fly the plane and build it. No sense in spending 6 months trying to strategize and write all the perfect cadences and get the right text. Let's use what we got. Let's just see what we can do. So I was packaging up some content, throwing it out there, and we're kind of humming along, learning a few things. And then I wanted to get to what I just talked about before. I wanted to get a webinar off the ground and let's have a conversation. We did one, performed okay. I wanted to get better, right? I wanted to get back to, you know, large registration numbers, really, you know, get our audience diversified a bit, really get some people in. And I mean, high level was looking on Parsley.com. And there was a site that we had, and this predated me, Content Analytics Made Easy. And it was just in the top five of destination spots people came to on our site in the simplest way I can break it down. So guess what I did? I put a webinar on called Content Analytics Made Easy. And all I did was take the, you know, just kind of looked at the engagement on that site where people went. That's how I chapterized the webinar. I put it on. Boom. It was the biggest one we'd ever done. So just use those data points to do that. And then that created a bit of a chain effect, right? In the content that we wrote based off of that, based off the data that we got from that. The boost in traffic, the boost in what people were looking for, that ultimately became our homepage. So now you go to Parsley.com, it's the Content Analytics Made Easy page that we had before. So
I love it.
It's a real world example, man.
Like, keep it simple, stupid, right? It's like, hey man, go look at your data. What's working? You're like, this is. You're like, cool. Then why do you want to do all those other 200 tactics you had?
Yeah.
Well, because more is more, man. It's like, wait a second. Like, more is not more. Like, let's look at our data. And I think the coolest part of what that story told is like, you acted. And I can't tell you how many people look at the data, draw opinions, and then go to something else. Instead of just being like, yeah, that's our best piece. Let's redistribute it. Let's repackage it. Let's go from there.
Yeah. Or just, you know, we can get in our own ways, right? Let's try to draw consensus across the board and please everyone. Sometimes you got to kind of go it alone, you know? And that was one. I mean, I was a team of one at the time. So I was able to really go it alone. But again, I just used a piece of data, went with it. And you know, we're continuing to see results from that decision, that data-driven decision. So
I love it. I love it. Well, that's a great example of the product. And thank you so much, David, for being on the show. It's been amazing. I had a ton of fun. Hopefully our audience got to learn something. I know I did.
Good.
And yeah, man, thanks for being here. If anyone wants to follow along your journey, how can they do so?
Well, I think you team me up right there. You hit me up on LinkedIn. Also at Twitter at dcardiel22. Stay pretty active on both those channels there. But yeah, this was a lot of fun. And if anybody wants to learn more about Parsley, talk content, talk shop, I'm game. So
I love it. All right. Well, thanks so much for being on the show. And that's Sour and Sass, everybody. Bye.
See ya.